You guys hear me?
Just now.
Okay. All right. So
You
you're giving me
froze
a
a, yeah,
thumbs up. You're all set?
you're good. You froze a little bit before.
Okay. I think as the Wi-Fi here might be a little bit spotty, but I think it's fine now. If not, I'll just go to data. Okay. So we are in Chav Tes Amid Beis. We're in 29B, and my friends, God willing, we are hopefully about to finish the second paragraph of Sukkah. Yes. So here we go. We are two lines from the top. So we're at the words Amar Rav. Okay, so basically, in our previous year, we talked about solar eclipses, among other things, and we basically started talking about these pairs of four that when X, Y, and Z happens, it's because of these four things. So we're at the end of that list. Amar Rav. So, because of four things, people lose their property. Now, timayon is a little bit of an odd term. Either maybe it means that they're hidden. I'm curious, actually, how does Rabbi Arthur Sproul decide to render it hidden or seized away? What's their rendering? Because Rashi has to
Descend
tell us.
into oblivion.
So what was that? What into oblivion?
Descend into oblivion.
Wow. Okay. It says in Rashi, it's mamamin uchalim me'aleihem. So it sounds like they kind of get like hidden in law and I guess obliviated on their own. Okay. So why do people lose their property? So for four reasons: al koshi schar sachir, one delays paying a contractor. Val oshke sar schachir, if you not just delay, but you never pay that person you contracted. Val sheporkin ol me'al tzavarei v'nosen achavareihen, if you are responsible to do something and then it's on your neck and then you put it on the neck of somebody else, what that says about delegating, I'm not quite sure. Val gazas haruach and haughtiness. And the gazas haruach k'neged kulam, in fact, haughtiness is as bad as all these combined. Avobanavim, but when it comes to the humble, it says, Vanavim Yirshu Eretz is Angu Al Rov Shalom. That when it comes to the humble, did I read? Yes. So they'll be able to inherit the land and they will be able to experience all the oneg, all the enjoyment of having much peace that is no doubt created by people of that disposition. So, Hadronalach. Yashim, we just finished the second parak of Sukkah. So Shkayak, everybody. Okay, and we're actually over two-thirds through just in terms of Dapim. So, in fact, what are we? Amount of Dapim, someone help me with the numbers here. It's 50-something. I always forget offhand precisely how much it is. The Sechta ends on 56. What's 56 divided by 2?
28.
Any what?
28.
Good. And we're on 29. We're going to get to 30. So we're past the halfway point, guys. So don't think just because it's the second part, we have three more to go. We're actually past the halfway point. So this should just make you feel even better about yourself. You know, it's interesting. I haven't looked into this, but I think there's like a, what happens is the Christian Bible, they riff off a lot of things that are in ours. So I think it's one of these things that that Jesus says in this, I think it's in the Sermon on the Mount. He says that the meek will inherit the land. So I think he's actually riffing off this pasuk in Tehillim, or I don't know, plagiarizing it. So there's a lot of quote sukkim lahavdil in their Bible, which is basically just plagiarizing or taking creative license with what's in our actual Tanakh. So that was just one that occurred to me. I'm sure I'm not the first to notice that. Okay, so let's begin the next parak. Here we go. Lulav hagazel. So we've been spending a lot of our time talking about the parameters of what makes a kosher or pasul sukkah. And we talked about it in the previous parak, not just about the dimensions of the sukkah, which is what the first parak mostly dealt with, but then we talked about the mitzvah of yeshiva sukkah, of okay, I have a kosher sukkah. Now, what are the parameters for fulfilling the mitzvah of actually dwelling in it? Teishu kein tzuru. Now, in the third parak, it's time to talk about the other central theme of sukkahs, which is the arba minim. So here we go. And in fact, by the way, I remember way back when we were deciding which Masechta to do next, it may have been some of you guys actually raised an interest in talking about monetary law. more financial kind of matters. And then I raised that like the three bavas are amongst like the thickest mesechtos in Shas. So it may have not been the best idea, unless you know, they keep me around for another decade or something, then we could talk about that. So, but this parak over here, we're going to be talking about right now, lulav hagazel, a stolen lulav. So a lot of yeshivas, which generally don't learn mesechtos that are found in Seder Moed, they like to sink their teeth more into Nashim and Nezik and mesechtos. So they'll actually learn lulav hagazel. It's one of the exceptions to the rule, because as we'll see tonight, and we'll talk about more next week, it deals a lot with monetary matters. So don't take it from me. Let's take a look at the Mishnah and the resulting Gemara. Lulav hagazel vayavesh pasul. So a lulav that's stolen or that is significantly dried out is pasul. We'll talk about why for each one. We'll just go through the Mishnah. Shel asher shel ir hanidachas pasul. If it's from an asherah tree, it was a worship tree, or it's from a city that's supposed to be destroyed, that lulav also is pasul. So that those are certain statuses. Yavesh is not a status, it's more of an experience for it. Niktam Rosho, if it's the head, the top of the lulav is snipped off, or nifritsu alav, or the leaves start coming off of it, actually. And the only thing holding the leaves to the spine of the lulav is that it is bound together, as Rashi says. So then it is possible. However, nifritsu alav kasher, if they're just extending outward, right? Because when you think about it, the lulav, right, it comes from the dekel, it comes from the palm tree. So we're used to seeing the palms once they've already fully expanded. But a lulav really is just getting one of those leaves when it is just starting to come out and it is still hardened for the most part. But in theory, you could have a lulav that process went a little bit further and the leaves began to expand a little bit, but since those leaves remain attached to the base, to the spine of the shidra, the lulav, so then it is still kosher. It's like a classic, what do you call it, sudas preda dvar Torah, in which someone gets up there, as you have like a group of people, and we're all about to go our separate ways at a graduation, and they say, oh, you see, there's a difference between the nifritsu versus the nifridu. The nifritsu, they all go their separate ways, and it's possible, but nifritu, we all go in our own different directions, but because we're still connected at the base where we come from, it binds us together, and it's a kosher. It's a Dvar Torah I've heard a few times. If you need one, keep pocket that Dvar Torah for the future. Okay. Now, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Yagdenu Malat, you should basically, even for this, you should bind it from the top, meaning don't let the leaves stick out, bind it and bring them all together. And remember, we also have a machlokis we'll talk about if there is an absolute requirement to bind in general. But we'll get there. So Matsini Harabarzel Shera. So where's Tsini Harabarzel? Basically, it comes from a very infertile area, and the lulav is malnourished. So I didn't bring my Masifta Gemara with me, but I'll try to do it next time. It might be worth doing a session in person where I can actually easily, like just one of these times, just so I can kind of take you on a tour of all the graphics and pictures, which will help us for the future. And or maybe you have to create like a Zoom slideshow or something. Honestly, I think it'd be easier if we just maybe met in person one time rather than a Zoom slideshow, which will take me forever to put together. But usually the leaves are all, you know, you've had lulavs before. If you take a look at your lulav, they're all overlapping each other. So here, it's like just enough that one set of leaves is able to hit the base of the next one. So it's a very malnourished lulav, but despite that, sheiros. As long as one leaf reaches the other and there's no true gap of the spine, so then it remains kosher. Finally, lulav sheishbo shlosha tzbachim gedilaneh bo kosher. Now, what is the minimum height of a lulav? You need at least three tefachim to wave. And we'll mention in the Gemara, though I think Rashi points it out, you need an additional in order to hold it. So meaning you need one tefach, actually a tefach, that you can hold the lulav with, and then three tefachim on top of the actual lulav itself. So you really need four tefachim, actually, for a kosher lulav. But you'd be hard-pressed, honestly, to find a lulav that's less than four tefachim. So this is a funny thing. People come in and They ask all these questions. In my experience, and it's not just mine, you know, in Rav Malamed, he actually writes explicitly. You know, it's hard, unless you're going with like all sorts of like chumras, it's hard to find a non-kosher lulav. The funny thing is, when people come in for their esrogim, and I'm trying to show them, so they're looking around, and people come in and they're like, oh, yes, of course, this, oh, this is a beautiful, and this is that. And they don't really know what they're looking for, honestly. Meaning, there's like actual halachos that regulate what makes an esrog a kosher esrog, and what makes an esrog a better esrog. And then if you check those off, then if there's one that appeals to you more. But, you know, some people, they don't realize that you're supposed to look especially at the chotem. You're supposed to look at the upper part where it starts to lean in. There's actual parameters for defining what is hadar, what is considered beautiful by Chazal standards. And by the way, we're going to talk about that very briefly. We're going to touch on that right now in the Gemara. So let's go to the Gemara. Kapasa gutani lo shana b'yomta rishon lo shana b'yomta sheni. So the Mishnah, you'll notice, makes no distinction between the first day of Yom Tov versus the other days of Yom Tov when laying out that a stolen lulav is and a dried out lulav aren't kosher. So, okay, I can understand why there's a blanket rule for all of Yom Tov when it comes to a dried out lulav. Bishlama yavesh, hadar be'inan. It needs to be hadar. So, by the way, Talmud Yerushalmi, which is cited by the Ravid, says, what's the issue with a dried out lulav? So we say, we say it's a Tehillim, of course, which has become part of Hallel. Lo ha-mesim yahaluka. What does that mean? The dead shall not praise you. So that actually means that you shouldn't take something that's absolutely dead and dried out to use before God while praising him. So that's actually the Talmud Yerushalmi's reason for why a dry out. I don't know. So now every time when I dive in Hallel and I actually pay halfway attention to it, I think to myself, I'm just saying, Lo ha mesim ya hallelujah, right? So I'm like, oh, right, that's right. I can't use the dried out lulav. And by the way, dried out means like really dried out. Even like, you know, we've got some dried lulavs in the past, but they were still within the, you know, fair game of being kosher. Okay. So, but that I can understand, right? Midrabanan, you need this standard throughout all of Yom, not just the first day. There's a discussion about whether Hadar is required all of Yom Tov or just for the first day of Yom Tov, which is why, by the way, if the reason that when your Pitum falls off your Esrog, it's Pasul, is because it's not Hadar anymore, so potentially that's only Ma'akiv on the first day of Sukkot. But the rest of Sukkot, according to many, I think Mishnah Berurah says as much, that if your Pitum falls off, it's still kosher the rest of Sukkot. So if you have to borrow someone else's esrog on the first day, don't despair. You might be able to use your esrog for the remainder of the holiday. So that's important to keep in mind. But anyway, Veleka. So we don't have a hadar here when it comes to dried out lulav. But elagazal bishlam yonder rishon l'ksiv lachem mishal lachem. I can understand why still lulav is possible on the first day, because on the first day we have a requirement of lachem. You have to own your own lulav. El biyomto sheni am I lo, but on the second day of Yom Tov, why not? Why is that problematic? Samar of Yochanan, Mishra Rav Yishim Ben Yochai, Dehavalei. And I was learning this earlier today when preparing, and Marissa was around, so she heard me say the words Mitzvah Habav Be'Aveira, and she's like, "Ah, Mitzvah Be'Aveira, that's a famous sugya." Indeed, it is. So you can't commit, you can't fulfill a mitzvah via a sin. Now, there's a whole discussion what the parameters are. We'll save Tosos for next time. But essentially, you are now going to come before a Kadosh Baruch Hu with a lulav that you stole. So you're fulfilling a mitzvah via sin. It doesn't work like that. Shenemar, what's the proof? The vesim gazel besapiseach besachola. So how do you? It's not pesach, but pesach is a mum of some kind, I think. How do you translate the word pesach? Right? And those who bring a stolen, we're talking about carbonos, but offerings. What's the translation they give? Yeah.
Lame. L-A-M-E.
Okay, I knew it was some kind of mum. Right? Wow. So the one who brings a stolen carbon, a lame one, vesachula, or a sick one, those are all problematic. So we see that the pasuk compares gazel to me to be sad. that and so a stolen carbon is analogous to, it's tantamount to bringing a blemished one, a lean one. Just as a lame one, there's no way to fix it. There's no way to rectify it. There's no way to rectify a stolen one. Whether the original owner has spared of hope of getting it back, or whether he hasn't. Now, if this all took place before the owner decided that he gave up hope and he despaired over ever getting his luv back, well, of course that makes sense. You wouldn't fulfill the mitzvah because you don't own it yet. But after the owner despairs, wouldn't you at least be able to acquire it for yourself? And it's a whole long tosis here, which is where the yeshivas sink their teeth in as to determining what the parameters of this are. But so even if you do become the technical owner of the lulav, but fundamentally, since it's a mitzvah haba ba'avera, it would be possible. So meaning, even on the first day of Sukkot, there's a requirement of ownership. Even if you get around that, on the second day as well, you still have the issue of mitzvah haba ba'avera. So that's what we'll keep in mind. Now, the Gemara continues to talk about mitzvah haba ba'avera. There's a tosis here that talks about mitzvah haba ba'avera. So I will leave you on a cliffhanger, as I tend to do. But this is a very important concept. And in fact, by the way, so for the Sefer Chinuch folks, we talked about it all the way on the first mitzvah of reproduction, a period for Rivya. So we're going to bring back our good friend, the Minchas Chinuch, next week as well, and tie it all together. Okay, so we're going to end here. I'm going to run to Mincha. And if you want a Kashi or Kalin, you can see me at 8 o'clock here at the kitchen. Hopefully things aren't boiling over and getting destroyed on my watch. All right, take care, guys.
Thank you
for making the time. Good learning together. All right, bye.